Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 62. I'm recording it on Wednesday, December 17th, 2008. The PE10 level today is 15. The title of this podcast is How Obama Might Change the History of Investing. I'm going to start by reading just briefly from, there's articles being published, you know, every day. Hundreds of articles, it seems, every day being published on our economic crisis. And I think, you know, my strongly held view is that the problem with passive investing is central to the solution. And so I want to read, there's an article called Bailout Backlash, published 12/16 in The Hill newspaper. This is a political sort of newspaper, sort of inside political. I'll just read briefly from this article. Brent Budowski was a former aide to Finance Committee Chairman Lloyd Bentsen. I used to work on the Hill, and I used to cover tax legislation, and I worked with you know, the aides to Bentsen. I don't believe I ever met Brent Budowski. I recall the name, though. I think what might have happened is when I moved sort of to an inside the office job, that may be when he was coming in, and so I heard of other reporters mentioning him but never met him myself. That's what I think may have happened. I sent him an email today about this article, and I debated whether I should mention that I used to work up there, but I ultimately decided not to because I just wasn't sure whether the name rang a bell, but I don't recall ever meeting him face to face. But anyway, Mr. Budowski has a column today in the Hill newspaper, and he says Americans have begun an angry backlash against bailouts that could become a national revolt in 2009. And then he goes through, he describes the money we've spent, and he says, virtually none of this money directly helps average Americans. Virtually none of it trickles down to the people who suffer the most and pay for the program. And he says, the people don't trust the banks. The banks don't trust their customers. Business does not trust the banks or the government. Taxpayers don't trust anyone. The SEC is discredited. The Federal Reserve has failed in its duty as a banking regulator. Congress has failed in its duty of oversight. The most wise and citizen-friendly regulator, Sheila Bair of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, is treated with contempt by the Treasury Secretary. The public backlash is only beginning. It will rise with every new scandal and Ponzi scheme and every new increase in credit card rates. That part rings true to me. You know, I don't know. When you're studying politics, what you should be trying to study is you know, you can never predict with precision what's going to happen, but you can get a sense of how things develop, you know, sort of a gut feel. And people don't get angry instantly. This is something I've been thinking since the stock crash, that I've been sort of watching, you know, how does it gel? How do people feel about it? And people obviously are upset, but I remember a quote I read very early on, in the early days of the crash, and it was a guy that works, I think, in a mutual fund, and he was quoted in one of the newspaper accounts. He says, we're not getting lots of phone calls. He says, we're expecting them. We're expecting a ton of phone calls from frightened customers, but we're not really getting them. And he said, I think maybe people are just too shocked. And, you know, I think that's been going on. I think a lot of people are sort of in a state of shock. But as they hear more and more scandals, the anger level increases. That's why I did that podcast. I think it was two podcasts back. You know, saying no, it was the last one, I believe. Don't get angry. Don't get sad. Don't get angry. Get smart. because I see this anger, you know, we're at the early stages. So Brent here is pointing out we're at the early stages. And as we're going to continue to hear about these, you know, frauds and Ponzi schemes, all this sort of thing, we've clearly only touched the surface. And as it continues, then the anger develops. Then the anger gets more intense. And then politicians have to come in. And there's a quote. I don't have Bill Bernstein's book in front of me. Bill Bernstein wrote The Four Pillars of Investing. But I quoted it. I quoted Bill's comment in a podcast I did called The Politics of Investing not too long ago. And Bill Bernstein mentioned how we are at the early, this was written in 2002, but he said, we're at the early stages of congressional interest in the, you know, the problems in the investing field. So this is something I'm watching, and I think this article is on the right track. He says secrecy is the enemy of equity, integrity, and common sense. Secrecy is the friend of negligence, misjudgment, and corruption. There are probably selected instances where the Fed should not disclose. He's talking about the Federal Reserve. But show me $2 trillion of secretly spent money, and I will show you trouble. In the coming days, I will be writing about the Bloomberg case and offering specific bailout proposals on the Hill's Pundits blog. The backlash is coming. Time is short. The dangers are extreme. America needs new thinking and an informed national consensus, and we need it now. I think the basic idea there is certainly true, and I wrote an email to Mr. Badowski, and I'll just read it briefly. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but I say, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm writing in response to your column. You know, what I hear in your piece is a desire that people focus on constructive solutions to today's economic problems. This is a big focus of the work I do on investing, you know, at the PassionSaving.com site and at the Retire Early and Indexing discussion board communities. Then I go on and I say, I believe that the source of today's economic problems is a misplaced confidence in the passive investing model for understanding how stock investing works. Robert Shiller, the Yale professor, who is the author of Irrational Exuberance, saw all this coming. He understands that stocks were wildly overvalued in the late 1990s, that a price crash was inevitable, and that seeking to avoid price crashes should be a public policy concern. We need to make average investors aware of the dangers of ignoring price when investing in stocks. That's the only way to recover from the crash and to avoid future crashes. And, you know, just a parenthetical here, Shiller wrote an article not long ago. I read it a week or two ago, and he, you know, it was only one sentence, but he got right to the heart of things, and he said, we're dealing with an emotional problem. He said, this is a psychological problem. See, most of the solutions we are hearing are, I would call them economic solutions, you know, bailouts or, you know, President Obama has talked about public works programs, you know, things that cost money, spending money. There's been talk about a stimulus package, you know, giving us money to spend, this sort of thing. These are economic solutions, and I don't offer any comment on whether they're good ideas or bad ideas. It's not something I study, so other people are better qualified to comment. But I don't believe that economic solutions can possibly solve the problem on their own. What's needed is to address the lack of confidence that Americans now have in the stock market, in the free market system, and in their leaders in government, and in their leaders in business, and in their leaders, in government and business, let's say. So, how do you get confidence back? You know, it's like saying, how do you get trust back? How do you get, say that you cheated on your spouse. I think that's a good comparison. That's a good analogy to what we're dealing with here. Say that you cheated on your spouse, and your spouse finds out, and the relationship's in trouble. You know, there's your spouse is considering divorce, and you don't want that. You want to restore the relationship. How do you do it? Do you say, I'll buy her flowers. You know, I'll buy her flowers. You know, that's not going to work. It's not going to work. It's an insult. We'll go on a vacation. Well, a vacation might be a good first step if the purpose of the vacation is to get away from the day-to-day stuff so that you have a deep conversation, deep, long, serious conversation. In that event, the vacation might be a good step. But if the idea of the vacation is to spend some money, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. And so, you know, that's sort of how I feel about a lot of these economic solutions. They may have some value, but if that's all we're going to do, it's not going to work because people do not believe in these solutions. You give people an economic stimulus and they're going to say, I'm going to save it because I'm scared. I might lose my job any day now. So that's not going to get the economy going. You know, they have this phrase, pushing on a string. When you lose trust, you've lost the glue that makes the whole thing work, that holds the society together, that makes the system work. How do you get people's trust back? Is it hopeless? See, that's the other extreme. One extreme is to sort of respond with these phony, baloney solutions that don't do the job, that because they don't get to the heart of it. And the other is to throw up your hands and say, we're all doomed. You know, I've lost my wife's trust. She's never going to trust me again. I might as well get divorced. No hope. The healthy, the emotionally healthy middle ground is, you know, the phrase I would use is be a man. You know, what do you have to do to get her trust back? She used to trust you. She doesn't trust you now. You want her to trust you in the future. How do you make that happen? You don't make it happen, you know, by reading her a poem or getting her flowers. You gotta say, well, why does she not trust me? She doesn't trust me because she can't believe me. There's a good reason why she doesn't trust me. I lied. I showed myself to be untrustworthy. So what do I have to do to recover her trust? I have to perform in a trustworthy manner. You know, you have to take some chances. You have to take some hits, take some hurt. You win her trust back. And you don't do it by covering up what happened. Don't do it by these lies, by adding more lies. You know, lies worked for me in the past when I wanted what I wanted. So now I'm in trouble. Well, lies have always worked. I'll pile some more lies on top of the old lies, and then everything will smell good again. It doesn't work that way. And that's what I feel that, you know, this is just an instinctive reaction, but most of the things that we've tried in these early months since the stock crash, it's just more phony baloney nonsense. You know, blaming everybody. You know, this person did it, and they're pointing to this person, and they're pointing to this person. And, you know, political gamesmanship and, you know, as I say, just throwing money at the problem. All of these things might have a place. You know, if there are people engaging in genuine fraud, they need to be punished. That's fair enough. But we also need to look at the man in the mirror. We need to look at how did we contribute to this? And that's a more serious approach in my mind. So the serious approach in my mind is dealing with the passive investing problem. That's the root of it all. You know, I did that calculation, I think, in the last podcast where, you know, I calculated how much has the loss been from the passive investing stock crash. And it's been $8 trillion just on stocks over the past 15 months. It's another $4 trillion from the housing bubble, which was financed, you know, funded by the passive investing, you know, model, the problems of overvaluation that came about as a result of passive investing. So that brings it to $12 trillion. And then there was another roughly $4 trillion that was lost from, you know, in stocks from 2000 through 2000, you know, late 2007, where we were just, you know, we had a sort of a slow leak and we were losing money gradually. So you got a total of something close to $16 trillion. You know, you can't just say, if this is a big problem, you don't lose $16 trillion out of your economy, you know, because there's one guy running a fraudulent fund somewhere. You know, what's the real problem? Let's talk real. Let's talk serious. And when you look at where we were in 2000, where the market was valued at three times fair value, well, then it's not hard. It's not hard to understand why we are where we are. Let's read Robert Shiller. How did Robert Shuler get so smart? He issued his book in, I believe it was March of 2000. How did he get so smart? I know that there's a... Yeah, here it is. Here's a section from Robert Shuler. He says, if over some interval in the first decade or so of the 21st century, the U.S. stock market is going to follow an uneven course down, as well it might, back, let us say, to the levels in the mid-1990s or even lower, then individuals, foundations, college endowments, and other beneficiaries of the market are going to find themselves poorer in the aggregate of trillions of dollars. The real losses could be comparable to the total destruction of all the schools in the country, or all the farms in the country, or possibly even all the homes in the country. Sound right to you? How did this guy get so smart? You know, he went to Yale. That's part of it. There's a lot more. A lot of people that went to Yale didn't see this coming. Why is this one guy that went to Yale? Why does he get it? Or the professor at Yale? It's because he looked at valuations. He looked at valuations and he said, where's the stock market headed? We're headed for a loss of many trillions of dollars because this is all phony baloney money. Anybody could have done it. Anybody who picked up his book's available in public libraries. Anybody could have done this. But we chose not to. And that's what I explore at PassionSaving.com. I explore why it is that we choose to lie to ourselves about how stock investing works. Why do we do that? Why do we cause ourselves this pain? Well, the point here is it's a public policy problem. We can't solve this problem individually. I can, you know, I've researched all these problems for 7 years now, so I could tell you I can't tell you everything, but I can tell you what I've learned. But a fat lot of good it does us if everybody else doesn't know it. If other people are destroying the market, us knowing what they're doing, it maybe gives us some sort of tragic sense about it. That's all. But we need to get the word out to our fellow investors, and you can't do that. This is where, this is where we have the ban on honest posting and all this sort of thing. Because if you discuss stock investing truthfully, I always remember that quote from Scott Burns. He said, Rob, you've added a new layer to our understanding of safe withdrawal rates. That's great. But he says, you can't be telling people they got the number wrong. He said, that is catastrophically unproductive. And I would just say, well, why? Why is it catastrophically unproductive to tell people that the retirement studies get the numbers wrong? Why? Isn't that a good thing to do? I'm a journalist all my life. I've tried to help people by giving them information. And I think it's fair to say that's the most important information bit I ever supplied to anyone, that the retirement studies that they were using to craft their retirements were wildly off the mark. And I get this guy who I give great, great respect for and affection for, and he tells me catastrophically unproductive. Well, the problem is Scott Burns can't tell the truth about stock, how the stock market works because of what he told us. He told us that too. He told us, he said, the reason the media hasn't reported about the analytical errors in the old school safe withdrawal rate studies is it is information most people don't want to hear. That's why. The financial planners aren't going to tell us the truth about stock investing, and the mutual funds aren't going to tell us the truth about stock investing, and the magazines and the newspapers aren't going to tell us the truth about stock investing. The discussion boards aren't going to allow honest posting on the failings of the passive investing model. Well, these are all the checks and balances in our society. If the discussion boards don't allow it, and the mutual funds don't allow it, and the financial advisors don't allow it, how the heck are we going to find out how to invest? How are we ever going to get our trust back? How are we ever going to invest in stocks again and feel good about it? How's that going to happen? If it doesn't happen, we're going to have another stock crash. We're going to fall another 50%. So how's it going to happen? And I think the answer is we have to realize it's a public policy consideration. And that's where politicians come into play. That's why I'm talking about the new president, President Obama. I'm going to read again these words from Robert Shiller because they're so important. I've read them several times before. It is a serious mistake for public figures to acquiesce in the stock market valuations we have seen recently. To remain silent about the implications of such high valuations and to leave all commentary to the market analysts who specialize in the nearly impossible task of forecasting the market over the short term and who share interest with investment banks or brokerage firms. The valuation of the stock market is an important national, indeed international, issue. All of our plans for the future as individuals and as a society hinge on our perceived wealth, and plans can be thrown into disarray if much of that wealth evaporates tomorrow. So we're dealing with a public policy concern. Well, who is it that we turn to for help with public policy concerns? Politicians, right? Government leaders, presidents. This is a big one. We're dealing with the greatest loss of middle-class wealth in the history of the United States. We have serious people today talking about depression. You know, we're already in a recession. That's been announced. Maybe heading into a depression. We have the possibility before us, you know, if you know stock market history, you know that every time we've been at insane price levels, we fall into a PE10 level of 7 or 8. We're now at 15. So that's another 50% drop. So we, you know, there's no economic requirement for that to happen. We're at fair value. There's no reason. There's no good reason. But, you know, emotions are real. They haven't been addressed. I haven't seen any great effort to restore people's confidence in the stock market. All I've heard so far, you know, these people come out and they say, stocks for the long run, buy and hold, share, you know, stay the course. Timing doesn't work. You know, the same old incantations, you know, that we've heard for 30 years now that have failed us, that have caused the problem in the first place. I've been thinking for a long time. You know, I've been saying for a long time, John Bogle is the one who should see. The problem we have is it's the classic. There's a word for it in economics, and I'm not. Is it the use of the commons? Something like that. It's a problem. The problem we have with stock investing is, I make this point all the time, there's no intellectual problem. You know, I'm some guy. I don't have a background in stock analysis. I haven't managed any funds. I'm a reporter. Some guy who posts on the internet. So if I could figure this stuff out, obviously there are thousands upon thousands of people smarter than me who can figure this all out. So why does no one talk? And, you know, some have talked about it. Schiller obviously talks about it. And, you know, Andrew Smithers talks about it. Peter Bernstein's talked about it to some extent. Bill Bernstein to some extent. You know, John Bogle to some extent. John Walter Russell, obviously. Ed Easterling, John Malden, Rob Arnott. You know, there are people who have talked about this, you know, this matter. But, you know, the fact that valuations affect long-term returns. But in general, you know, it's sort of hushed up. You don't hear much about it. Certainly, you can't discuss it on discussion boards. Can't discuss the realities. Because it embarrasses people. See, that's the problem. It embarrasses people. If I go to, you know, you say, well, why was there a ban? You know, say it, you know, bogleheads.org. That's a big investing board today. Talk about Bogle's ideas. Bogle's talked about reversion to the mean. Bogle obviously understands that valuations affect long-term returns. Why can't you talk about that? Well, the answer is, today, you can say the words valuations affect long-term returns. That is permitted. There's been an opening. There's been a loosening of the censorship at bogleheads.org. But what you can't do is you can't explore the implications. You can't say, well, since, you know, you can say, there are people there now who say, I change my allocation according to valuations. I've seen several people say that. So that's being permitted, and that's good. That's good. Now, what you can't do is you can't go the next step. You can't have a thread where you say, let's all talk about how much we should change our allocation. You know, let's discuss, you know, we all know that we have to change our allocation with in response to big changes in valuations. How much? Let's discuss strategy. That's what you can't do, because that's sort of, well, it's a conflict. It's a conflict with passive investing. That's always the rub. The rub is, if you talk too much, you know, I don't want to go through the whole history, but historically what happened is the ideas that back up passive investing were breakthrough ideas. That's when we learned that short-term timing doesn't work. But the quote-unquote experts made this mistake. They saw that short-term timing didn't work. They jumped to the conclusion that long-term timing didn't work. And then this became very popular and with the huge bull market. And then they sort of felt, I believe, they felt too embarrassed to admit they got it wrong. You know, these smart people got it wrong and caused people lots of pain, lots of trouble. So they, you know, it all sort of went underground. You got to the situation where people sort of hint at it. They let you know. If you really want to know the realities, you can figure them out, just like I did. You know, you could search the internet like I did. You could figure it out. But you'd have to spend a lot of time, because it's all in code. You know, they use code language and things like this. And they don't, you know, they don't want to answer too many questions. It's sort of hard. But the problem is the embarrassment factor. People are embarrassed. And now that there's been a price crash, the need for you know, accurate, honest, realistic, sensible stock investing advice is greater than ever. But the embarrassment is also greater than ever. Look at the losses. Look at the losses we've caused. So, you know, I say it's the economists have a name for it, and I don't know what it is. I can't recall, but it's something to do with the problem of the commons. This is a classic public policy question. It's like, you know, sewers. We all need sewers, but who's going to pay for them? You know, are you going to pay for a sewer? The way to do it is have the community pay. You get your town to pay, or you can say we all need high schools. You know, so who's going to pay? You know, we pay taxes, and then that money's used to build a high school or a sewer or a highway that we all benefit from. You know, a police department, a fire department, an army. All these things are public policy issues. Well, learning the truth about stock investing is a public policy issue. This is something we all benefit from. And I make this point all the time. I say this is a telling the truth about stock investing is a win-win-win-win-win. Nobody loses. Nobody. The investors, we all get to retire 5 years sooner if we knew how to invest effectively. We all benefit. The mutual fund companies, some people would say, oh, it's not good for them because they benefit, you know, by getting people to buy stocks when they're overvalued. Well, they, you know, that's a short-term benefit that they get that would be wiped out, obviously, if you tell people that it's dangerous to buy stocks when they're at insanely high levels. You're not going to be able to make as many commissions at times of overvaluation. But the reality is, if we tell people the truth about stock investing, you know, the passive investing doesn't work, that you need to change your stock allocation in response to huge price changes, there aren't going to be any more insane prices. If we tell people the truth, what's going to happen is, as soon as prices get too high, as soon as we go above a PE10 level of 20, people are going to sell their stocks, and we're going to be back at fair value again, and then the mutual fund companies are back in business. Say you're a financial planner. Now, how about the financial planners? Do they lose out? Michael Kitsis made the point in one of his emails to me. He said, you can't stay in business if you tell people this stuff, if you tell them passive investing doesn't work. Well, that's true. If you're in a competitive environment, you know, and there's 10 financial planners and 9 are telling them, you know, timing doesn't work, you know, stocks for the long run, blah, blah, blah. And you're competing against that. Yeah, you're not going to get any business. You're going to be wiped out. But what if all the people know the truth, the realities, you know, as we know them today, based on the historical data, based on the academic research of the past 3 decades, based on Shiller's work and, you know, Arnott's work and, you know, the work of Cliff Vasness, John Walter Russell, all these people, Ed Easterling. What if we tell people? then the people selling the passive investing stuff, then they're not going to have an edge anymore. They'll be at a disadvantage. They'll be the ones afraid of going out of business. They'll start reporting the realities themselves. All of this works beautifully. It's a win-win-win-win-win. But you've got to lay the groundwork. You've got to lay the sewer system. You've got to build the high school. You've got to have the infrastructure. So, you know, I've been struggling with this question of how do I persuade Jack Bogle to step forward and say I was wrong, or, you know, at a minimum, if he said, you know, about passive investing, or if he said, I'm not sure. You know, I came up with that idea in one of the podcasts. I said, if he just said, I'm not sure, I think that would do it, because that would open up the boards to honest posting. That would spread. You know, blogs would pick it up. Newspapers would pick it up. Magazines would pick it up. And once, you know, people would pick up the calculators, you know, you get write-ups. Then you'd have financial planners trying to identify with the, you know, trying to, sell their services by, you know, they'd be giving speeches on rational investing. They would be, you know, promoting the ideas and thereby promoting themselves, a very healthy sort of arrangement. But see, the hard part is that first step. How do you get people? We're now in a vicious cycle where the experts are saying, I can't tell the full truth about investing because, you know, people are going to be mad at me and I'll lose all my business. And the investors are saying, oh, I can't go along with rational investing until the experts say it. They're the experts. I'm not going to invest according to something where all the experts are saying it's wrong. So the people are telling the experts not to say it, and the experts are saying, we're not going to say it until you tell us it's okay. And it goes round and round in a circle. So we got to break that circle. So I've been thinking we need a speech by John Bogle, but maybe a fallback position is a speech by President Obama. I have no inside information that he's going to do this, none whatsoever. I do know from some of the financial planners, you know, I've been speaking to Bill Bangen and Michael Kitsis, that you know, Michael told me, he said, a lot of the financial planners I talk to are starting to lose confidence in the passive investing model. So I know people are talking about this. You know, they're talking about it at their conventions, that sort of thing. You know, they go aside and they have a little, you know, what are you doing? What are you doing? What are you telling your clients? Bill Bangen's getting his clients out of stocks. You know, zero stock allocation. That's anti-passive investing. You know, but he's not really, I wouldn't say he's promoting it, you know, at this stage. He told Bloomberg.com he did it, so he's not hiding it. And I think he's somewhat proud of the fact that he got his clients out before, you know, about one third the way down or the price drop. So they say he saved his clients a lot of money. But now he's got to decide, what do I do going forward? Am I a passive investor? Am I a short-term market timer? Am I a long-term market timer? You know, what sort of criteria do I use to decide when to get back in? So all these questions are swirling around, and I think the only way to come up with answers is to have a national debate, and in order to have the national debate, people need to feel safe to, you know, say what they know. I don't think the experts know at all. I don't mean to say that all these experts know all that works and they're hiding it from us. They know that passive investing doesn't work. You know, we know that there were, you know, Rob Arnott asked 200 academic researchers, you know, who here believes in passive investing, and nobody raised their hand. So we know that the people who study this know that passive investing has been discredited, that, you know, the academic research shows it. You know, that's the case there is just so strong that it's, I don't know that they all know it, but it's hard to think that most don't know something. They know that there's something up. They know there's something wrong. But that doesn't mean they understand all the ins and outs. What they need is to discuss this with others. You know, Michael was at this convention, Michael and Bill Bangen, on safe withdrawal rates, and I sort of feel like it's a joke. They're talking about the old school studies. The old school studies were discredited, you know, almost 7 years ago. And they're going to, you know, Michael's telling me, he says, I don't have time, you know, to listen to a podcast. But he has time to go to a conference on the old school safe withdrawal rate studies. You know, something doesn't add up here. You're talking about something that was discredited 7 years ago, and you can't listen, you know, you can't take an hour to listen to a podcast about rational investing. That, you know, I'm very grateful for Michael's time. You know, he's given us lots of time, so I don't mean to sound ungrateful, but I do think there's a disconnect. I think what people should be doing is flocking to the websites and the you know, the planners and everything else that have a rational investing perspective rather than a passive investing. But we need to be making that transition. So in order to make that transition, we need a figure who is sort of larger than life. You know, it's got to be a big name, because that gives everybody else cover. When the big name, if Obama makes a speech to the entire country and he says, look, we're looking at solutions, we're looking at what to do, and one of the things we've learned is that we don't want to cast blame, but we found that the investing advice that we, you know, you've been given over the past 30 years, it was well-intended, it was based on research, the research passed peer review, it was serious work, but there's a lot of research showing that valuations do indeed affect long-term returns, just as common sense tells you, you would think. And you know, people jump to some conclusions. I don't think he needs to say more than that. But he needs to say, that may have been a big factor in this crash. That may have been the primary factor. And we need, you know, I've talked to, Robert Shiller. I don't know that he has, but I recommend that he do this. And Robert Shiller's explained to me, it is a serious mistake for public figures to acquiesce in the stock market valuations we have seen recently. And I'm the new guy, you know, I'm a fresh face, so I'm not tied up, you know, in all the old way of doing things. And I think Robert Shiller makes a good case, and I would like to see a national debate on what really works. I'd like to, my goal is to restore confidence in the stock market. Because I don't want to see, I think that, you know, what Robert Shiller is telling me is valuations are now at reasonable levels. We don't need another 50% price crash. But I have concerns from talking with my economic advisors that if we don't restore people's confidence in the markets, if we don't tell them what we did wrong, what caused all the trouble, we're not going to be able to restore confidence, and things are going to get worse. I think that could be a turning point. It won't turn it around in one day or 1 week or 1 month or 1 year, but it could be a turning point. What we're dealing here with, is a psychological problem. You know, it's like the situation with your wife. You know, you're caught cheating on her. You're not going to win her trust back in a weekend. It just doesn't happen that way. But if you can get to a point where she's willing to listen to you and willing to give you another try, and your behavior backs up your promises, then in a year or 2 years or 3 years, you can win her trust back. And the same thing's true with the U.S. stock market. We can win investors' trust back if we become serious people, and serious people don't have bans on honest posting at discussion boards. If we become a serious people, we can turn this around, I believe. And it, you know, we certainly should take a try in any event. But we need it, you know, we need leadership. We need leadership. And I'm beginning to have doubts as to whether the financial planning industry is capable of it. There's just too many, there's too much pride, and there's too much embarrassment, too much guilt, too much shame. But, oh, you know, President Obama is a totally new face. And he's coming from it. He's coming at it from a different, different place. There was a quote by Thomas Friedman. He had an article in the New York Times this morning, a column. And he was talking about the free market. The free market has failed us. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I'm a big free market advocate. But he had something there about, you know, animal spirits. The good thing of free market is they free up the animal spirits. But he says, I don't want to be killed by the animal spirits. And I think a lot of people feel that way. Free markets are wonderful, but free markets are risky. there's a risk there. They need to be governed. And all the people who love free markets should have been telling us the realities of stock investing for, you know, from 1981 forward, when Shiller did his first work showing that valuations affect long-term returns. These people should have been stepping up to the plate. If you love free markets, you do what you can to protect them. You know, I made the comparison in an earlier podcast. It's like the liquor industry. If the liquor industry doesn't tell, you know, doesn't do anything to restrict alcohol to minors, the liquor industry is going to face more serious regulation. So they put up these posters saying, don't drink and drive. You know, if you've got to act responsibly to maintain your freedoms. I mean, I tell this to my boys. I say, you want freedom, you know, to whatever it is, you know, to do such and such. Well, earn it. Show that you can be responsible, and I will grant you more freedoms. But if I see you behaving irresponsibly, I'm going to reduce your freedoms, not increase them. That's the message we need to deliver to the financial planning industry. You want to win our trust back? You want to win our confidence back? Earn it. Earn it. Tell us what caused this stock crash. Why did we lose all of our retirement money? And tell us what needs to change so that we can have confidence it's not going to happen again. Those are the two biggies. So I'm thinking we need to take this into the political sphere. And that's why I wrote that email to Badowski. You know, I was basically, you know, I read his article and I thought, why not, you know, I don't know if he's going to respond or not, but I said, why not write to the guy? He's not involved in financial planning, but he's involved in, you know, he writes about politics. And I said, you know, this is a political issue. It's a political issue. You know, I mean, another issue here, Shiller mentions, I don't know if I can pull the quote up real quick, but let me try real quick. I may have already said it, but he said one of the comments Shiller made in near the section where he says, I think I read up to this. He says, the tendency for speculative bubbles to grow and then contract can make for very uneven distribution of wealth. This is a, you know, this is an income inequality issue. And it's totally unjust. There's a quote from, I believe it is from Rothschild. It was one of the, I'm not sure of that. It was one of the big, you know, tycoons. Say that, I don't know, an earlier error. And the guy said, bear markets are God's way of returning stocks to their rightful owners. That's what's going on, because I have to believe that, you know, I think there are wealthy people who have lost a lot of money in this stock crash, but I have to believe that some of the super wealthy have access to better investing advice than what we're getting, you know, in the magazines and in the television and all this sort of thing. They're getting better advice. And so, you know, they knew, I have to believe that there were people who knew to lower their stock allocations when prices were insane. And now they're able to buy up cheap. And if prices go even lower, they'll buy up more cheap. The middle class is being killed. We were told to buy stocks when the long-term value proposition was horrible. We've lost, you know, years of saving. And if there's another stock crash, we're going to lose more. And then we're going to have to sell, and we'll never get that money back. And the compounded value of the loss is just astronomical. You know, people need to start calculating how much they've lost, not just in current day dollars. Think how much you lost with all the dollars you won't be earning because you don't have that money available to you anymore. That's income inequality. Because if we knew, if the information was being shared, if the academic research of the last 30 years was being reported to us, we would have known this. We could have protected ourselves. And I don't see how we can trust the markets again until steps are taken. But there are all beneficiaries, no losers, no one loses. Stocks, if anything, stocks will be more popular after we report the realities, because stock investing is a far less risky endeavor than most people today realize. It's far less risky if you know what to do, if you know that you need to lower your stock allocation when there's a price crash coming, when valuations are out of control. But if you're telling people, you know, passive investing, stick to the same allocation, that makes this risk of stock, it triples the risk. You know, it makes stock investing just too risky for the middle class investor to engage in. You just can't, you know, in 1929, the drop in stock prices was 89%. And our valuation levels in the 90s went far past that level, far past it. The middle class investor can't afford that kind of loss. It's just not, it's not sensible to think that we can withstand those kind of losses. But if we have public policy leaders, you know, encouraging us to invest rationally to protect ourselves, you would never see those sorts of valuations. We would never see those valuation levels again. If our leaders behave responsibly, and I'm beginning to think it has to be not only leaders in the personal finance field, it needs to be leaders in the political realm. This is a public policy concern, as Shiller says. You know, I think of, you know, we have television commercials. Smokey the Bear says, only you can prevent forest fires. Well, what's a bull market but a kind of forest fire, right? Isn't that what it is? It's somebody sets a fire. Somebody gets the idea of getting rich quick. Somebody starts promoting stocks, you know, excessive levels of stock of investing. And things catch on fire. That's what happened in the 1990s. That's why we're living through this today, because we borrowed so much from the future that it's going to take us a long time to pay back that debt. And my feeling is, you know, we have a friend, my wife and I, and, you know, she had a child that has a disease that, you know, it's very sad in a way. The child's a beautiful child, and I'm sure the mother obviously loves, the mother and the father love the child, but we get a picture of her, you know, at Christmas, and, you know, they always report on how she's doing and so forth, and also about the research being done. And I just think it's great, because you take something negative like that, and you know, and you try to raise money for the research being done, and of course it makes you feel good, and the truth is it is good. You're doing something good for the future. But, you know, how else do you deal with that sort of pain? You see, you have to turn it into something good. And then it ends up not being as bad as you thought. You know, you love the child to death, and you end up feeling okay. And I've heard many stories of that type where people have something like that happen, and they end up saying it was actually a good thing, looking back, you know, years later. But I think in order to deal with something like that, you have to turn it into something good. Well, what we're living through today is this, you know, a crisis. I don't think it's too much of an overstatement to call it a crisis. Crisis, not just of the stock market, it's a crisis of it's coming close to being a crisis of our, you know, free market system. And, you know, President Bush said that the other day. You know, he said, I gave up my free market principles to save the free market. You know, sort of a paradoxical statement. But I think the problem is, you know, whatever belief he had in the free market, he wasn't pursuing it. I don't know if he knew anything about this problem with passive investing. I presume not, but you know, he certainly could have had advisors that knew. But whoever, if there was anyone that knew, they didn't speak up. And because they didn't speak up, we're in this situation. So, you know, if you're going to believe in free markets, you know, a big part of free markets is they won't work unless information is free. You know, that's the whole theory. The whole theory is that there's a feedback mechanism. And if people don't know what they're doing, the free market just doesn't work. It's a disaster. And that's what we have in the stock investing area. Nobody knows what they're doing. I talk about, you know, I always put the word experts in quotes because the people who we think of as experts don't know what they're doing. They don't understand that valuations affect long-term returns. And you can't just stay at the same stock allocation when prices are at the levels they were at from 1995 through the first part of 2008. It's irresponsible. But people, you know, I tell people this and they're shocked. They've never heard it before. Or maybe they heard it and it sort of went in one ear and out the other. The message hasn't been repeated enough times to really take. But I believe if President Obama gave a speech on national television, it would be heard. And people would be shocked. But then the experts, you see, would have the follow-through. Now, one part of this that I think would be a good idea, but again, this is all speculation. I don't know that any such thing is going to happen. I have no idea that it's going to happen. I'm saying it's a wish list. But something that I think would be a good idea is to incorporate an amnesty into this. Now, you know, you have to get, you know, legal people involved in terms of how that's phrased. I can't say how to do it. But I think one of the big problems, one of the problems I know this is true in our discussion boards, the retire early and indexing discussion boards, is that, you know, early on we had this abusive posting, you know, death threats, all this sort of thing. And I had always felt that if the site owners had jumped in, they would have solved the whole problem, because we had huge interest in learning the realities. But once people engaged in unethical behavior, you know, they weren't just expressing opinions, but they were making threats of violence or you know, engaging in deliberate deception. And once that was in the public record, it became very hard for those people to then back down and admit what they had done. So the people in a position of responsibility, the site owners, made the problem 10 times worse by failing to act. And I think a lot of these people who became, you know, just ruthlessly abusive posters, if they had been reined in early on, if they had been suspended for a week, they would have came back and they would have followed the rules. I absolutely believe that. But once you sort of, you know, what happened is they'd see, oh, I can get away with this, and then they'd keep upping the ante. They'd try more and more abusive stuff. And at some point, they just can't admit that they ever did it. And so how do you salvage that? It just gets worse and worse. And then it goes to a new discussion board community, and they don't want that community talking about what they did in the first one. So then the abusiveness goes, you know, it travels. So an amnesty, some kind of amnesty, where, you know, any financial planner who has, you know, who advised, you know, passive investing over the past 20 years or whatever, you know, is off the hook. You know, just sort of a recognition, you know, like we had with the Vietnam War. Didn't we have an amnesty where there were people that were escaping to Canada and, you know, some people said prosecute them and others just said, look, you know, the war was controversial. We want to put this behind us. We're going to have an amnesty. We want these people back. We want these people back. We want their contributions. You know, they're good people. They're people of high intellect. They were caught up in this insanity of the, you know, the passive investing era, which I believe was rooted in just a mistake. You know, the original research on the efficient market theory was wonderful stuff. It's the mistakes that were made, you know, the hasty conclusions. So I think an amnesty, you know, would be helpful. I can't give details on how it should be crafted, but I think the concept makes a lot of sense. You know, we know in making the case for why this should be done, I hope that you know, the president's financial advisors will know. I don't know what the financial planners are talking about. You know, I say I know there are talks going on, but I don't know what they're saying, of course. But one of the things that I hope they're saying is, look, this is popular, because that's what we demonstrated in the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. Go to the post archives, or there's an article. I summed it up in a couple articles at the website in the Banned at Motley Fool section. You know, I give, you know, I have one called Community Comments on the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. It's comments from the Motley Fool stage of the discussions, and you have all these people saying this is the best discussion we've ever had. There's huge public interest in this. People know, you see. Humans are funny. They may say on the surface, oh, I believe passive investing, but you can tell that on another layer, they've got their doubts. They've got common sense, and they know it doesn't quite ring true. You know, there's something wrong, but they can't put their finger on it. I've had people tell me that. I can remember people who wrote me, and you know, either on a board comment or an email. I've had both, and they'll just say, Rob, I've always had my doubts about these old school safe withdrawal rate studies, but you articulated what I've always had this nagging feeling. You articulated it. You know, thanks, man. So people know. And when you have the discussions, they're very excited. But of course, you know, you're not going to get people to participate unless you offer protection. You have to protect them from the abuse of posters, or people just will not participate. No way, no how. That's the other thing we've shown, beyond any reasonable doubt whatsoever. So, politically, I think it's a winner. Politically, I think it's a winner. It will. It's a shocker. You know, I once had this image. I was talking about how politicians need to get involved in preventing bull markets, because bull markets are the source of all the problem. It's wild bull markets. Every time we've had a wild bull market, we've had an economic disaster in the aftermath. No exceptions. You know, bull markets are hell for investors. They're hell. And of course, the biggest problem we have is that we're drawn to them. You know, we love them. It's like chocolate cake, you know. We love them. And a little bit of bull market won't necessarily hurt us. One piece of chocolate cake won't hurt us. But when we start eating 5 pieces of chocolate cake a day, we need responsible adults to step in. And we don't have them in the personal finance field. Or we don't have many of them. We have some. God bless the ones we have. But they're not numerous enough today. We need responsible people to step in. But I think it's a winner. You know, I think you have to be careful about it. But I think the public is ready. One, you know, in two ways. One, they love to learn. People have this nagging sense that it doesn't work, and they want to hear the realities. And two, the problems have been serious enough that this is the time for bold action. People are open to solutions that in other circumstances they would not be open to. If you tried this before the crash, I would prefer that we had done it before the crash so that people wouldn't have lost all this money. Of course, ultimately, they were going to lose the money. I mean, you know, when you have phony money, you can't keep it. But we could have done it in a more orderly way, and we could have done it in a more graceful way, and it could have been done better. But I would have liked it to have been done before the crash. But the benefit of doing it after, I do believe in trying to look at the positive side, and the benefit of doing it after the crash is that people, maybe people can accept it today, things they wouldn't have accepted pre-crash. So I think politically, it's a winner. Not that people are gonna, you know, say that you're wonderful because you've done this, but I do think it's the only route to restoring confidence in the market, and I think people would take it as you've done something. You've done something real. You know, it's like this husband who's cheated on his wife. If he comes clean and he's humble, you know, and he's contrite, she's not going to say, I love you the way I did before. I think that's an unrealistic expectation. But you can start to win her respect if you do it right. And once you get that door open, it can grow. But if you play games, you're going to lose it. You're close to losing it already. Play games and you're really going to lose it. So I don't think we should wait on this. I think the sooner the better. This is where I get to the Brian Budowski article. You know, he's saying there might be a real revolt in 2009 if public policymakers don't start to get serious. And of course, you know, it's a new administration. They can't really do anything now. So the time is early in the new administration. And I think there's an opportunity here. And I hope that there are some big names. Obviously, Robert Shiller is aware of this. I would think he would have some connections, you know, where he can raise this idea. Warren Buffett, you know, obviously has connections. You know, I think he's aware of this issue. You know, John Bogle, I think, is aware on some level of consciousness. He may not know all the details, but he's certainly aware of the general issue that valuations are a problem, and that they were a big factor in the stock crash, and that, you know, that reality conflicts with his advice for people to follow passive investing. It's a free speech issue too. You know, that gets a little bit off of the purely economic side of it, but I think it's relevant because it's in the political sphere. You know, there's a free speech issue about, can we use the internet to talk about important investing issues? And you know, if you've listened to other podcasts, you know, there's been huge interest in this question. The question of, you know, the realities of stock investing at the retire early boards and the indexing boards. And it's been banned. The topic is banned at all of our boards today. So that's a free speech issue. You know, can we use the internet? The internet is the communications medium of the future. People conduct their business on the internet. People treat it like it's just for idiots, and it's not. It's maybe it started that way, but it's not for idiots today. The internet is used by, you know, everybody. It's where we conduct our business. So that's where we, you know, Obama, of course, was a big user of the internet, you know, in his campaign strategy. So we need to use the technology. The technology has been abused. I think the internet was one of the big factors that, well, I shouldn't say one of the big factors. I think it was a factor in causing the out-of-control bull market. Now, the internet was not really as nearly as big in the late 90s, but it was growing. And, of course, what happens in a bull market is everyone is hearing bad information. Bull market is, you know, it's a big lie. That's what a bull market is, a big lie. They don't call it a bull market when stocks go up 6.5% real per year, which is what the economic growth justifies. They only call it a bull market when it's far, far beyond that. And whenever it's far, far beyond that, it's a lie. You're just borrowing from the future. It's not real. And the problem in a bull market is all your feedback mechanisms are hurting you. You're getting bad feedback. You know, people make irrational choices and they get rewarded. They get financial rewards. Well, that causes them to make more irrational choices. Well, one of the things that happened this time around, one of the questions we need to explore is, why did valuations go to worse levels than ever before? Why was this the worst bull market we have ever experienced? And I think one of the factors may be that the internet was coming into its own during the most out of control stage of that bull market. And so the ability, the feedback mechanism was bigger than it had ever been before. It was easier for those bad messages to spread. So we were hearing more bad messages. We were using the technology to lie to ourselves to a greater extent than we ever have before. So the price we pay is greater than ever before. But again, you know, that gets into the doom and gloom. But the opportunity is, let's use the internet for good. That's what the great safe withdrawal rate debate was all about. You know, look at the good we've done. Look at the things we've accomplished. Look at the things we've learned together. Use the internet that way, which was my hope when I began building up the retire early board at Motley Fool. That was my intent, that we use it, you know, for positive, controversial statement. You know, and I think obviously that was the intent of the vast majority of all of our board communities. Do that, and we can use the internet for good, and we can turn it around. It's not a partisan issue. There's nothing partisan about learning the truth about stock investing. You know, I've contacted a few people in the political side, and I've only made tentative little steps, and I think I may be doing more of that in 2009. But you know, I've contacted just a handful of people, and I'm trying to keep it bipartisan. You know, have some liberal groups and some conservative groups, and you know, my feeling is I'll take help wherever I can get it. We need help opening this up, and I've had people give me feedback, you know, Ray the site, and I've had feedback from people that appear to me to be liberal and people that appear to be conservative. And it's not a partisan issue. You know, we all want to have safe retirements. So it's not a partisan issue. So that's a great selling point, because, you know, obviously what you want to do in a new administration is you want to, you know, reach out. Get people, you know, not just people who voted for you supporting you, but people who didn't vote for you supporting you. And this is an issue where the potential, I think, is unlimited. I've always felt that way about the Great Debate, that it was both the best and the worst that humanity has to offer, certainly that the internet has to offer, because we saw so many people making positive, constructive contributions without getting paid a penny for it. I just felt that was wonderful to see. And yet, you know, we saw this other nasty side, you know, this nasty side where people get all caught up in, oh, I can't admit I was wrong, I'm embarrassed, you know, and, you know, they get into all this nasty, you know, put downs and this sort of thing. So what we need to do is be serious. The problems are real. The problems are public policy concerns. This is not just for the financial planners. The financial planners, first of all, they can't handle it. They haven't been able to handle it themselves. They've got a problem. They're on the hook. They need our help. And I think it's Obama is coming in fresh. I think it would be a wonderful way to put this problem behind us. If we were to open up discussion of investing, if we were to acknowledge that passive investing has failed and open up new ideas, it's not like there's a situation where we'd be starting with a clean slate where you'd say, you know, oh, you know, passive investing's been discredited, but who knows what to do? Who knows what does work? We know what works. I mean, we don't know all the details, but the intellectual groundwork has been done. All these people I mentioned for 30 years now. You know, these books will be pushed forward. Instead of being on the backlist, you know, they'll be pushed to the front. You know, we take Random Walk Down Wall Street, we push that a little bit to the back, and we put Irrational Exuberance up at the front. But we don't do away with Random Walk Down Wall Street either. That's going to be incorporated into the new model. The you know, half of those insights are great stuff, and we want to make those people feel good too. We want to make those people feel part of the party, and you know, we don't, you know, they are deservedly part of the party. The people that are advocating passive investing today came up with some wonderful, powerful insights, and I want those people, you know, to go down in history as having done valuable, good work. And we've got to address this as a society, as a community, to make that happen. They don't seem able to do it on their own for whatever reasons. So I think we have to go to the top. So I hope people will think that over. If you have ideas, certainly if you have contacts, you know, in the administration where you have people that you think should know about this, let me know. You know, I could send them emails. Or you can send them emails. You know, if you know people, just talk it over with them. I think it's an idea with a lot of potential. So I certainly think it's worth, you know, worth giving some thought to. Good luck with your investing strategies. Take care.